And that has to analyze, and then this is...
I thought Scott was going to be here tonight.
Mason's on his way to on it. Can we wait just a couple minutes?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I just got a text. He's
pause.
Sorry.
And moving. John, were you able to ascertain whether there was anything on here?
Just some old stuff.
Okay, so that what you, but you got it by email that you didn't really need this?
The only thing I copied off of there was the audio.
Was it on here for you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right,
I know I have them, but I thought, oh, it's all in one place. I'll just copy it.
Okay, all right. Perfect. Thank you. I just want to follow up and make sure you have what you needed. So.
Is this our biggest minutes page of all time?
I think
no.
Right.
No, I don't think so. Full book last time we had more than this.
But of this season, yes.
Yeah. Season. And last year.
Cool. Oh,
there we go.
Hey, Mason.
Well, we're ready to begin. This is
they were waiting on you.
This is collective bargaining. With the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida at the University of Central Florida. It's February 22nd, 6:30 p.m.
More or less.
And we are looking at the minutes.
Well, I think we can strike out all the "and it was discussed" part, because I don't recall much discussion last time. I think it was a paper exchange.
We're just assuming you discussed it.
That was like something on our part.
Did you discuss it at some point?
And each side discussed it in caucus. Yeah. I mean, that would be okay. That would be accurate, I think.
Yep.
It was discussed by someone.
Any substantive ideas on the minutes?
They look good to me.
Thank you.
Well, since that was a substantive idea, but, or whatever you want
to
call it.
Since the minutes aren't very substantive, they used to be, actually. And that became such a disputed item that we went to just...
So can we just strike the "and it was discussed," or
sure.
You want to "and it was discussed by each side in caucus"?
No, we'll
no,
strike
no,
it.
We don't need to say that.
Case in point.
And to some extent, maybe they were, maybe they weren't, I don't know. But we don't need to have that in there.
I don't think we really did. Other than that, does that look good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the only change from our side of the table.
We have several... articles with language for your consideration this evening. And I don't want to jump out and do it, but if you have something you'd rather bring to our attention first, John, or if you have something for us to see, I didn't mean to preempt.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Snug? Or am I reading it upside down?
Your case.
Oh.
S-U-N-G-G, yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
All right. I guess that's
never heard of it.
The brand?
It wasn't something that you purchased it for, though. You purchased because it fit, right?
Well, no, I purchased it because it does.
It is snug.
Okay, but the case itself is the snuggy part.
Well,
so.
It's just a case.
Okay.
It's what the case does.
Yes.
Everybody get a copy.
Mine does.
This first article that we've provided for your consideration is Article 5 on academic freedom. You had proposed striking from 5.2 the word "such" before the word "employee," which we have picked up. You have suggested at 5.3 academic responsibility, striking the word "by their utterance," plural utterances, and that you would like to phrase that as by what they say and do. We picked that up. We've moved in 5.3H, be forthright and honest in pursuit of and communication of scientific and scholarly knowledge from H to B, to create a new H, which reads to fulfill their obligations as responsible employees in quotes, which is the term of art, to report incidences of sex, gender-based discrimination or harassment, sexual assault, exploitation, relationship violence or stalking that involves a student to the Office of Institutional Equity. And that's the Title 9 obligation that's been created by the Department of Education for all of us to comport with. Do you have anything you want to add to all of this, Sherry?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, I'm just getting caught up. So H just got moved up to B. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the only really, besides picking up the two changes that you'd suggested in 2 and 3, the only thing that's added is a new H.
Okay, then everything else just got pushed down the stack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, because that change didn't show. Okay, so now I see where you are. Okay, so this is Title IX language?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What comes right out of the new university policy on sexual discrimination.
And the university policy comes out of Title IX.
Yeah.
Which identifies faculty as responsible employees to report these things.
Do you know which university policy it is? Just so we can.
Yeah, I can find it for you, I think. Is it policy or reg? I think it's policy.
Just clarification, does H assume or presume some knowledge of the actual discrimination?
Does
it presume some knowledge of the actual discrimination, like you know that it's happening?
You have to know that it's happening.
Okay, because it doesn't say that.
Well.
How can you report something you don't know is happening?
Right. Right.
Well, we thought that would be implicit, but if you are more comfortable with adding language of reporting incidences of which you have knowledge, that's certainly something that
makes sense, yeah.
We would not be opposed to. Because that's clearly the Title IX obligation. Just, it has to come to your attention.
Let's see if this is what I'm thinking of. John, I may have to get on my big computer to, because I don't know.
Is it to 2004.1?
Yes, I think that's it.
Could be.
Okay.
It's like 26 pages or something long, yeah.
Yeah, I'm on page 15. That's where it talks about Title IX reporting obligation.
Yeah.
What's the policy called?
2004.1, prohibition of discrimination, harassment, and related interpersonal violence.
Is that the one?
But why is this in academic freedom and not in...
Well, it's under responsibilities. We could actually move it to
discrimination.
To the discrimination.
Yeah, wouldn't it fit better there?
I think it could just as appropriately appear in Article 6.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just thinking on the fly, because when I've read that, something went off my head, like, this doesn't, like, it didn't make sense to me, and I think that's what it is, and I just feel like it's misplaced.
Well, we're getting ready to hand out Article 6, but we'll go back, and after we present this, we'll add that into the new Article 6.
I don't know. I think it fits the spirit of a lot of these items: upholding ethical standards, respecting the integrity of things, contributing to the orderly and efficient functioning. I don't think it's a terrible place, but I agree that I wouldn't object. I don't think to it's some logical place in six.
Yeah, I can. It does somewhat go beyond the academic exercise because it would be. is really when it comes to your attention. Like, in other words, if it came to your attention and it was a student that you had no academic responsibility for, you still have to report it. It's not just students under your supervision.
Well, that's the other question that I was going to ask, and we'll check up with the policy and the Title IX obligations too, but the words "a student," that's awful general. Like, is that... Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out what the universe is that we're trying to capture.
Right. So
is
it, yeah, I think it's spelled out fairly, okay. Yeah, see, fairly clearly in there, and it is becoming something that is increasingly being dinged for not doing. I mean, not UCF in particular,
right,
but universities.
Well, what comes to my mind, you know, immediately is the Penn State situation,
yes,
from a few years back that they're still experiencing.
Yeah.
So that's why I was wondering about what a student meant and whether that was too narrow or too wide. But we can check what it says in the statutes
or
and
we
then
could
go from there. Title IX.
We could possibly even just refer to fulfilling your obligations as responsible employees under UCF policy, whatever.
Well, I think we should have some description of what the policy is. So, you know, if people want to...
Yeah, we could look into it because, I mean, it's Title IX, and it's from the U.S. Department of Education, and clearly they don't have... They can't create an obligation that... You have a responsibility to people in general, you know.
Right.
So it would have to be really a student that has some relation, direct relationship with
the university,
the institution that you're a faculty member or an administrator, because it applies to both equally. But like, for example,
the policy does define what a student is.
Mm-hmm. Does it?
Okay. On top of it, student. Any individual defined as a student in the University of Central Florida's regulation, this, and the Golden Rule Handbook.
Okay, so we have
another reference.
Another reference.
Right.
Two references.
Yeah.
UCF Regulation 5007 parentheses 4S. That's on page 6 of the policy.
Actually, if it would help, when we take a break, I'll print out the policy.
Sure. But no, because we want to get this one right. I mean, this is
really
important.
Well, we have time to respond to it, of course.
Yeah, but we want to make sure that we know.
Yeah. It's actually a very important development in the life of higher education.
And the more I think about it, the more I think it really belongs in 6. But you got 6 for us, so.
Mm-hmm. 6, yeah.
I agree.
You know, I'll tell you, you were talking about Penn State, but I think part of, I don't know this because I haven't studied, but I kind of always thought that part of this was that certain students were protected when someone made an allegation against them. So they might be, for example, a very successful athlete.
Yeah.
And when people would make complaints, it wouldn't go anywhere.
And be kind of swept under the rug.
Same thing with coaches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's where that all came from, but I don't know.
That was very delicately put, Mike. Artfully. And gently said.
Yeah, you're starting to lose me until Sherry intervened and then...
Yeah. Well, I can't remember who any of our quarterback was this year, but think Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
Whoever. No. Yeah.
Non-discrimination is a change to 6.1, which we picked up. In 6.2, in our continuing mutual effort to... Mm-hmm. Eliminate language that we think is unnecessary. We're proposing striking 6.2b, which is a kind of a detail.
It's just a legal definition.
Yeah.
It's in the same category as when we defined, you know, FMLA, and we went through pages and pages giving the legal definition. So.
This changes all the time, too.
The big change in this one is that now all claims of discrimination will be investigated not as part of the grievance process but through OIE, because they are the people who have the expertise and
training.
But do they have the resources?
Well, they have as many as we do. They have more than we do. Yeah, they're hiring like crazy over there. Well, not like crazy, but they're hiring.
Okay, so this is tracked from status quo, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess before, did it just say promptly investigated?
Mm-hmm.
But not by who?
No. And in truth, we always sent it to OIE. But then we ended up with different people. OIE be doing one, and we'd be doing one at the same time.
Yeah.
It was just crazy.
Maybe an immediate supervisor reads this and thinks that they should be doing it.
Yeah. Well, they were in some cases.
Well, yeah. What happens when the complaints about the supervisor?
It should go to OIE,
which is
supposed to be sort of like somewhat of an arm's length.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah, they do not always find in our favor.
They would say they are.
Can the university administrators fire the OIE people if they don't like what they're doing?
Can who?
Can the university administrators fire the OIE people if they don't like the way the investigation is proceeding? How I'm thinking about it.
Investigation is proceeding, are there?
Well, I mean,
I don't like the way you're conducting your job, you're fired.
Well, theoretically, everybody in this room could be fired at some point if you don't like what you're doing, but no, I mean.
You mean
there's no one that I know of that is unfireable, even though there's a rumor that non-tenured people are unable to be fired, but that's not the case.
Aren't there other offices, though, at the state level, I think of, that investigate things like retaliation? And what about whistleblower laws and things like that? So they have different pathways.
Yeah, whistleblowers go through audit. And at the state, you have to there is the Florida Commission on Human Rights, and then there's the EEOC.
Mm-hmm.
So you can file a claim with them, but the internal mechanism for filing it, if you want to have it investigated here, I mean, you can go straight to FCHR or EEOC, but you know, that takes you forever. Because they have, 360 days to investigate and then issue a...
Yeah, well, there's nothing in this article that would prevent someone from going to a state or federal agency or a local Fair Employment Practices Agency with a complaint. This is simply because we really cannot, I guess we could agree that that would be the only mechanism for it, but we're just saying that this is what we're agreeing to do internally.
So it's not the solitary means of doing it.
No, you can always go outside. And in fact, people do.
Yeah. But we couldn't...
Some frequency.
Yeah. I mean, what we're saying is that if someone has a complaint, that OIE shall promptly investigate it. We can't commit the resources of an external agency. You know, that's up to them. You take it to them. Right. Okay.
So is it fair to say that both of these have been discussed, John? I'm going to check off these two as both have been discussed.
Yes.
All right, next.
They have now, Charlie.
And I'll note that everybody is laughing and Charlie has a huge smile on her face. As do I.
In the future, would it be too much to ask if you guys could number the lines so we could follow a little bit easier?
I'll try and do that. On this one, I have it really, the margins are tight because it was status quo, and I just grabbed it from the book, which has the tightest margin possible to have the least amount of paper that I can print. So I'll have to move the margins and stuff, and then I have to move them back when I print. So that's why that looks like that, but I can put the numbers in if that makes it easier for you. It's just another step, two steps.
Don't get on Charlie too hard about that, because sometimes I forget. And she'll zing me for it.
Note to self.
Note to everyone.
Did you have other articles for us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you want to give us some in the meantime, we can do that.
We can take this.
He's ready to go.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Because then we've got...
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Everything's fresh on our minds. So why don't we give you just one?
UFF number.
This is going to be article, actually 28 from way in the back of the book. With very minimal changes.
I almost did a version of that for us. We had like five tonight, so I thought, well, we can wait on that.
Well, we can respond to that. Did anyone not get a copy?
Did you guys get a copy down there?
Yeah.
Okay. You're fine? Okay. We'll just do our traditional stack.
Three. Okay. You have number one. So you've added asked. With the rights, added rights and to benefits, and okay,
and just straightening out the language,
yeah,
and the last line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So, what's the difference between asked and coerced?
Well, asked is what often happens here, right? It's the would you mind doing me a favor, and then the ask is turns out to not be a favor.
Okay.
I just wanted to know why
required or coerced, I thought covered both of those situations.
I haven't thought this out, so there may be a reason for this. But is the phrase in the second sentence twice, rights or benefits, as in the current contract?
And is it or as opposed to and?
Yeah. I was wondering if they should all agree.
Logically, it should be an or, because I could ask you to waive rights but not benefits or vice versa, and it would only be a violation if you asked you to waive both.
Rights and benefits.
It should probably be or.
Yeah, in terms of logically, that's correct. In terms of what's in the rest of the contract, I think it says rights and benefits.
One for Mike. I've been waiting for you to get something.
What did it say, John?
Professor, no less. Currently. Extra bonus.
So 27.
Ding, 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 ding.
He says it's or in the current language.
Is it?
Yeah, it's current language.
Okay.
So wait, what are you tracking from then?
Wait.
No, we're good. We're good. It does say or in this. It just.
But in the first one,
in the new language,
rights.
It says rights and.
Used to say waive the benefits?
No, we should say the first and should agree with the second. The rights.
Okay, sorry.
Grammar logic.
Got it, I think. But rights and is added. It used to say waive the benefits.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then right below it, it said rights or benefits.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to make it consistent.
No, you have it right there. Now I'm using the word right, which is confusing. Mm-hmm. You have it correct in the second half,
right,
and then
correct.
You've added the first part.
If you say right 10 benefits, and I have to wait, ask you to wait both, which will be a violation.
It just should say right, all, should they, but all of them should say or.
Well, yes.
We're good.
There will be more prediction if it said or.
Yeah, just consistency.
Okay. Right, but I want to make sure that this is actually tracked properly.
It is.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
I would say that was a discussion.
That was definitively a discussion. It was not the most. It was. It's a confusing discussion, but it was a discussion.
So both sides agree to or? Can we say that?
Yes.
Years from now, there'll be people other than us arguing in front of an arbitrator, but they said and.
That's what we're trying to avoid. Make it as clear as you can. Not right away. No.
Nope. Oh, okay.
All right. Well, we'll give you one more just for good luck.
Yeah.
We came prepared tonight.
Oh, good.
Don't make it sound like it's a unique occurrence.
No, I'm not. But. Jeez. This is a testy crowd tonight.
And there's no alcohol on the table.
Nope.
That's what we get for bargaining at night.
We're actually cogent tonight.
It's not on the table. It was there before.
Well, we put four on the table last time. And we have five on the table this time. So
good.
So this is
making progress. Write some. Well, this is the minutes thing.
This is regulations. We received the UFF proposal number 1, Article 7, on February 1st. So this is our proposal number 1 response. There's new colors on this one. Is the orange picking up?
No.
No. Is there a
it's
reason?
It's more than one person.
It's because more than one person working on it.
Oh, okay. Seven point four it moves up to E. Is that correct? 7.2E. Looks like to me.
Where's 7.2E? Oh, okay, got it.
What the change here is, if I'm tracking it, is that we will make certain documents available by links on the website, and then we will provide sets of documents as requested in accordance with the Public Records Act.
And we've taken out the mandatory dates for when things have to be. Or at least some of them.
He doesn't specify where or how it will be put. This is not more than once an electronic list. He doesn't say on a website or given out to people. Or
where are you pointing to, Macy?
E.
Which E?
At the bottom of the page.
7.2E.
7.2E.
Sorry. It doesn't say what will be done with that list. Or even that one will be created. It just mentions a list.
Well,
that's okay. 7.2.
Oh, it's just the part about the university shall provide.
Yeah,
was dropped when that moved up. So yeah, there's no.
Yeah.
There's no what?
There's no connecting clause.
Yeah, there's no.
There's
no verb.
You could functionally put it as 8.5, and it would. Do the same job, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure would.
8 point, I'm sorry.
We could move it up here.
Point
5. He's saying 7.2A, move it to five, number 5.
Yeah.
Create a 5.
Your accent gets in the way sometimes.
Okay, very good.
Hold on a second.
All right, Mason.
One for Mason.
Here, another thing they will provide on the website.
Okay.
Okay.
Gotcha. I see you're talking about Mason. Okay.
Okay. Sorry, that was way hard to explain that.
Good discussion, everyone.
That was also a discussion.
Nick and I got this.
She's going to do this all night, you know.
I'll second that.
We have put in here and defines what a discussion
is. Yes. I'm back in time, but I just noticed that probably needs a call. Select instructional materials. Free to
write. Okay.
Policies apply to the grades, not to the instructional materials.
I thought we had that in there. Okay, well, yeah, we can take care of that. Okay. Yeah.
Well, all right, that's
seven.
Do you want to give this the other two or see if you want to
okay, you want a combination?
Yeah.
You want to give us something else? Is that what?
Yeah, it's up to you.
To me.
It is definitively up here.
We don't have too many copies of this, so we'll give you all the ones we have. As long as I have them. I'm not sure I have them. We can always
might have to make copies of
it. Yeah, or we can always put it up on. So this is the famous severability article. At some point I want someone to give it. A seminar on the severability savings clause.
Really?
Yeah. I've asked a lot of people about this, including my cousin, who's a labor attorney, and I get different answers from everybody.
Well, you know, the okay. The answer is I can give you the answer. It seems to be. Expanded maybe beyond its core purpose, but the core purpose is if you have a contract that's got 18 clauses and one of them becomes void, someone could argue the contract is now void because they were all interrelated and all interdependent. And when one goes, the whole document goes. And so a severability clause is just that for the purposes of our collective bargaining agreement. If a clause or article is invalidated, it just disappears and is not enforceable, but the rest of the contract is still a binding contract on the parties. I think that's all really it is. It's severable.
Yeah. So I was interested.
The more correct term should be modular.
Modular is one.
You take one piece away and the building still stands.
I think what you do is you sever that article. Like a sword out.
Excision. Excision would be good.
Extraction.
Yes, extraction.
Viability. Wow. Mortality.
Okay, I'd like to think about in this one.
Do you have some discussion questions?
Not going to be able to say it.
Okay, so we're striking all this stuff about.
Well, see.
So a court can't declare that part of the contract is invalid.
That core purpose thing you were talking about has been stricken?
This.
Well, by a final court jurisdiction, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Supreme Court of Florida says some piece of this, some portion of this CBA is invalid. We just ignore them.
No. Right in the lines 5 and 6, if it's declared illegal by the final court of jurisdiction.
All right.
Yeah, that second sentence, 7-9, is a little bit interesting because as Sherry knows, there is a principle called the impairment of contracts, which means that a law cannot pass that impairs contracts. But then there's, there was a case a couple years ago called Scott v. Williams where the Florida Supreme Court said that even though collective bargaining agreements may contradict the changes to the Florida retirement system, that law stands and was binding on all the parties. So I don't know that if 7-9 is still good law. I don't think you can contract to violate law.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think you can make a contract that violates the law. So, like, for example, if the legislature passed something that said you cannot pay K-12 teachers on a step plan after June 1st, 2018, I don't think you can say, well, we've contracted to the contrary. So for the next 3 years, we'll act outside of the statute because we have a contract. Because This kind of says that what you and I sign off on, John, supersedes the Florida legislature. I would like to think I had that authority.
Well, our understanding is that in certain circumstances, or in a lot of circumstances, that in fact is true, that the contract oversees what the legislature enacts.
But like I said, there is a principle that says that you can't impair a contract.
Can't impair.
The Supreme Court would agree with that in terms of that pension thing, because I ended up having to pay 3% more on my into that pension fund.
And well, they changed all the drop.
Yeah, they did change drop provisions. Mm-hmm. Even
see, we didn't have things. Well, at least on our end, we didn't have things specified in the contract.
We had drop specified in the contract.
There were a lot.
But I think we didn't have all the provisions in there.
But there were contracts that were entered into the court record that said, like, for the next 3 years, we'll have FRS retirement with no contribution. And they said, no, you're going to contribute. It's a law. So. Hmm.
Okay. Well, it's just
go back and look at, like I said, it's everybody's favorite, severability.
We'll take that and read it. I mean, there's a lot of interesting legal issues raised with all of this.
Mm-hmm. So is it time to take a caucus?
If you want.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you gave us some things to work on.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll make a copy of that one for you. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so this thingy. Oh dear. Well, I can see that this one.
Sharks away.
Analyzing spectrum.
I always get people, you know, after they dive, they say, did you see that big shark that swam like 5 yards past you down the slot? I'm like, nope, never saw it.
Okay.
It's like, I'm glad you waited to tell me that until we were back on the deck.
Okay, so. Well, I've got those recorders going now, and we're back on at 8:38.
Okay.
So we can start, I guess.
Sure.
And so what we did is we developed, it's now our third proposal for the academic freedom article. And with both this one and the next article, what we did is we...
Do you have a copy of this for us?
just here. But we can give you a copy, a hard copy.
Yeah. Okay.
We have an electronic copy at this point.
Okay.
Just trying to figure out how I'm gonna. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Or do you want to just take a minute and make hard copies?
It's okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
And so the items that you see that are in gray are highlighted in gray are areas where we agreed on language, or where we agreed on language. So we imported your language, or you agreed to our language.
Okay.
And then the remainder of the changes are ones that aren't shared right now between the two. And some of them, as you can see, like on line 28, are comparatively minor. So for example, we picked up your language on line 31 to replace utterances with something more appropriate.
Okay,
and if you can scroll down a little bit. So we captured moving that part up to B. If you go down there, John. I think all the rest were the same. There's the strike out of that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've talked quite a bit about
what it was called.
The Title IX.
Title IX. Yeah, and
we're going to move that.
Yeah, so we didn't leave it in here. We just said it's probably going to get moved.
So roll me back, if you will, John, to the first paragraph. Let's see where we're apart. Okay. Okay, one is good. Two, you're adding to create and to select instructional, and you're adding and course materials.
So did you want to speak to that, John?
Yeah, the Florida statute, the textbook affordability law, kind of broadens the scope of what course materials are. So it was initially just textbook affordability. Now it's textbook and instructional materials.
Okay.
So we just wanted to kind of reflect that language, that it's not only the textbook, but it's also all of the ancillary materials that are used in courses, along with the appropriate technology or system.
Okay, and determine grades in accordance with the university policy.
And that's just part of what we're trying to do as we move along here, to cite the explicit policy. Yeah. So there's no ambiguity. Everybody knows, all right, we're going to here, and this is the policy we're referring to.
Okay. Why do you include the date with that? Because the policy number's never going to change, but at some point there may be a modification to the policy.
Well, the policy number would change. It would be, if there's an update to this policy, it would be 402.1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would.
Right, so isn't that what Chuck was just saying? Or not?
No, the date. December 6th.
He was saying, like, by putting this into the contract, do we foreclose any amendment to the grading policy? That's what.
Without bargaining, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'd be making university policies would now become part of the collective bargaining agreement.
Right, so we're importing that policy in as part of the bargaining agreement. But then that means if that policy will be changed, it needs to be bargained and ratified by both sides.
Not the policy itself.
Not the policy itself, but the reference, yeah.
But essentially the policy itself.
Well, it depends on what happens to the policy, I guess.
If it's a different date, the number changes.
Well, I think what John was saying was that the policy number changes every time there's a change made, and the date would be changed.
Usually an extension, like a point one.
Point one, right. Yeah. So we're okay with that as long as we know what we're pointing towards. And so we've got a document, and that's what we're attempting to do here. Whether we do 4-402, we just need some effective way to say this is the document we're talking mm-hmm. about. And whether the numbering convention does it by itself.
I think it does. Because
whatever we can both agree on, this is what it points to.
You're right. You just add something to that.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I guess the word expected and expectations is added to replace the duty, and I guess if you scroll up, John, the obligation. So the other way.
Oh, the other one.
Obliged. Okay.
They were just trying to modernize the language.
Do you see a difference between duty and expected, or obliged and expected? And let me ask you this. Is it that obliged is mandatory and expected is not?
Sort of like the difference between may and shall.
I think it's just like, I don't see much of
a difference. Well, there's a big difference between may and shall.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, does by adding expected, does that mean it's not, it's no longer an obligation, but just it'd be nice.
We hope you do it.
We've been using a lot of shall. Should it just say, accordingly, they shall?
We could do that.
I guess I'm asking what your definition of expected is. So if somebody is expected to do those things and they do not do them, are there consequences?
Well, there could be under the discipline clause, right?
Right.
One way to interpret that would be the difference between there might be weird exceptional circumstances where that expectation might be, you know, a hurricane comes and something weird has to happen. We're obliged means no exceptions ever.
Right.
The obligation means you have to do it no matter what.
Right,
as opposed to expectation, you're incumbent upon you to act. As
so
opposed to you're expected to
using
act.
Using Mason's example, which one of these A through H or whatever that would we strike in the event of a hurricane?
Sorry, I'm making up hurricane because I have no idea what's on the rest of the list, to be honest.
Well, okay, so a real-life example. Let's go up. Okay, it's just common pain out of it. Observe and uphold ethical standards, okay? So ethical standards requires things like if I'm going to transport specimens of endangered species, I have to have the proper paperwork for it. Well, what if I know a tornado is coming or a hurricane is coming and I can get to a safe place with those specimens? That technically, I'd be violating ethical standards to move them without the permit. But in reality, that would be the smart thing to do, is to get them out of harm's way.
I don't know that that's UCF's issue. I think
it's
the federal government that's going to be on your tail for that one.
Right, but, you know, so that's what we're talking about.
These are the discipline procedures for extenuating circumstances like that.
But am I hearing it's really not modernizing the language, it really is changing the intent?
How they change the intent?
It's going from obliged, which doesn't have any wiggle room, to which expected, which we've all had different interpretations of at the table.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, parsing duty or even obliged. I mean, obligations can come with exceptions, so can duties come with exceptions, depending on how big extenuating circumstances we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The entire university is nuked off the planet and we still have to file grades.
I mean, I kind of like Chuck's idea to say they shall. We say that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they shall. Or maybe it's obliged works okay for us, and maybe you can come up with a different word than expected that still fits with you have an obligation to, you shall. But either one communicates what I think what we're looking for, which is you need to do these things. It's your responsibility and you are to do it.
Well, let's take a look and see if we can come up with a
language
that...
Yeah.
It's part of it, it's just the... what's the right word? The connotation or, you know, obliged. So, you know, it's got that sort of indentured servant thing that you're obliged to do this. As opposed to having some balance of what you're able to do and what the right thing is to do, as opposed to just, but it's not necessarily, but that's looking at the word without what's down below it. If You see what I mean? Just looking at the word standing alone and not looking at what's following it.
And we were just asking because of the intent of the change. I don't know. I mean, I would have to think about it. I mean, maybe an arbitrary reading that would not see a difference. I don't know. I mean, they might say, if you're expected to be at work at 8 o'clock in the morning and you're not, you're in trouble.
Right.
Right.
And so it's then there's
I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe I don't know.
But if you're expected to be at work at 8 o'clock and
you
got blocked by, you know, the fire department wouldn't let you on campus for some reason, then what?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you know, all obligations and expectations have impossibility and exceptions.
Well, we can think about it. I mean, what we were thinking about was the same as with utterances. Where that's an odd term, and it.
Yeah, it's odd. Yeah.
And so we suggested remarks, trying to get that in there, and then we looked at your language and said, a lot of these elements in the list, they're actions that are non-verbal or non-communicative, and so. You're fine with that.
Okay.
Are there any other things to discuss?
Well,
hey, John, on line 52, after the word unit, there needs to be a comma.
Okay. Now, did you go on to 6 or did we stop at 5?
Can someone just go ahead and email it to me right now so it fixes it on where we are? Because without a copy, I don't have a.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't have proof of what we talked about. Does that make sense? So it makes me uncomfortable if I don't have a physical document.
Well, I can give it to you.
Do you have the USB?
I can give it to you on the USB, Charlie, if you want.
Yeah, we have the
exchange.
Yeah, we'll just exchange our USBs again.
put the other one on there, too. Put them both on there.
You thought I was going to throw it high. Your palm was turned up.
We're doing the other one, right?
Yes, we have another one.
Okay, good.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you? I'm insulted. We didn't have time to go through 6, and we wanted to clear our brains about that with the possible infiltration of the language. Good. So we went to 7.
Okay.
So can you call up 7, John?
You mean minutes? This is number 6, so number 7.
So Article 7 is UF, minutes, regulations.
Okay.
Proposal number, what three. Proposal number is it, 3?
Or no, this one's proposal number 2.
Proposal number 2.
The other one was number 3.
Article.
Can you blow that up a little bit, John?
Yeah.
7 minutes.
Just trying to find
things.
All right, so let me track through this. So 7.1, you strike the last sentence in 7.1. 7.2. You restore, the university shall provide with hard copies.
Yeah, because those hard copies are really useful to a lot of people, including folks outside our bargaining unit. You know, for example, department and unit chairs and folks like that. But we should, as you recognize, have the CBA up on the website, which is already done as a matter of course. And really, since this is the CBA, it should be item 1 and then the other things in order below that.
Okay. Let's get to C. Great, thanks. That's in the library.
Okay. Yep.
Right. So I don't think there are any changes in either version on C.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're at D.
So now we're at D.
Oh, that should be great too. Oh, yeah, this part. Yeah, that's. And once again, the gray part represents.
Yeah, so that's the strikeout you had. And so we accepted a lot of the changes you suggested about not having the dates and things, just ask for them as they're needed. The one thing that we really would like to see included on all these on line 35 is the UCF ID as a way to track people as their names change and things like that. And that'll prevent a lot of confusion, and we won't have to ask you about what happened to this person.
I think think there was a reason that we removed it, because it's considered sensitive.
The UCFID is not according to the
I'm just saying that it was considered, it was considered sensitive. That's the reason why it wasn't in here before, so I'll have to review what its current status is.
Yeah, well, that's why we suggested this. We wanted to make sure we didn't have anything that was, what's the right word?
Yeah,
not sensitive, but a unique identifier.
Yeah, unique identifier.
Yeah, we want.
It is a unique identifier, absolutely. Right. That's why I think it was considered sensitive, but I will check its status now.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going.
And so the gray are all the things that we took from yours.
Okay.
And on lines 59 to 62, that gray, that's the section that was imported from below. So
okay.
That was the change you suggested making. And so
okay.
We did that. And when John scrolls down again, you'll see that that's struck out.
Okay. Okay. Oh. Any questions are done?
No, I don't want to get a. I'm one of these people that I'm like, I need it.
Yeah,
so I can
make that
thing, but.
You like that too?
Yeah, one side. Yeah, I do.
It's okay to close these out, John, because I need to close them out in order to copy on those.
Okay. Are you guys okay?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, if you don't mind, that'd be great. Thanks.
We, just to quickly to address. The two articles that were provided to us tonight, one being Article 28, which is maintenance of rights and benefits. We have some concerns with the inclusion of the term asked, that don't plan to be asked, required, or coerced. So if someone has a conversation with someone in which it is proposed as a possible option, that some variance would maybe serve the benefit of everyone involved. That that be a contract violation if the ask is without coercion. So
coercion can sometimes be implied without really. No, I'm not coercing you, but I'd really like you to do this.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the line though, right? You have to be able to say I was coerced with to convince whoever's going to enforce the contract. But I think. There's an example. Chuck, do you want to give an example?
Yeah, an example that I think can come up from time to time is the faculty member could be assigned a two-day teaching assignment that might extend beyond, I think, the 9 hours that the CBA has. And if they were to refuse that assignment because it would be a violation of the CBA, they would have a different teaching schedule, perhaps, that would cover 4 or 5 days during the week. And a question could be asked to them. We understand you're supposed to do this within 9 hours. These two classes would have you here 2 days a week for 10 hours, but it's only 2 days a week. The alternative is you'd be teaching 5 days a week.
Or even what would you prefer?
Yeah.
That's a question
that's
being asked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you prefer teaching these classes?
Yeah, but the ask, which would you prefer, that's different than asking.
Ask.
But you're saying it's either this or that, as opposed to would you prefer? And in that particular case, I believe there's a waiver in there that allows the employee to, it's at their discretion. They can alter this schedule, of, teach beyond that time limit if they desire.
What our concern
so
is,
that
if the word
the contract.
Asked is in there, we can't raise that question.
This is not being required or coerced. This is.
I think that's too broad.
It's too broad a word. Is that where?
An ask without coercion. I mean, I know that you can be asked with coercion, but I think there may be circumstances where we're concerned about that. There's an ask without coercion.
Right.
So is there another word that would be better?
You're suggesting which would you prefer? Bringing that question up, if this is the language of the CBA, is a violation.
And that's our intent.
Yeah, because...
Because now you're giving the person, and that can very easily be fixed, so that the alternative is even worse in the employee's eyes than the thing that
the administrator is trying to coerce them into doing with the ask.
Yeah, but, right? But, yeah, but it could
so also... like if you don't like broccoli and I give you a choice between collards and cauliflower, that's not much of a choice. You probably don't like either of those two things either.
Actually, I right? hate broccoli, and I hate like collards, but I do like broccoli, but I do like cauliflower.
Well, they're all in the same family. That's
the
why
point
I
being,
those.
Though.
Well, but the point being that the fix could be you're going to teach 4 days. I don't know. That's our concern, is that, okay. That it may stifle a conversation that's in the benefit of everybody involved. And it's non-coercive. So, anyway.
What if your quiz ask was requested? Would that change the intent here? Because they both are equally.
I think it has to do with the non-coercive communication. I'm just expressing what our concerns are with the use of that word.
Yeah. The problem with that is that, you know, more than half of the communication is nonverbal. You know, it's in body language, it's in tone. I mean, I learned that really well looking at one of my own transcripts in a deposition, that you read that thing and you think there's no tension at all in the room. And I remember distinctly how much tension there was. The attorney was ready to throttle me right across the table. There's a lot that goes into that communication that could be an implicit threat.
Right.
Well, I mean, it has to be, we've already agreed that it cannot be coerced, and that has to be something that, I mean, coercion is something that has to be established to the reasonableness of someone who's trying to enforce the contract, if it came down to that,
right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody, a person could come in and say, I was coerced. And this is why I felt the worst. And if it's the body language, I could say, he was sneering at me. but anyway, we're just not comfortable with the term asked. Because there's a lot in this contract. And some of it, I guess, should under no circumstances be waived. But there's some things in this contract that maybe for the benefit of everybody, it says, yeah, we can do that. We can work around that. So, anyway, that's what
we're going to do. Well, if there is, we suggest the language, we should put it in there. I mean, we want a contract that works, you know, for everybody.
Yeah.
But that also doesn't have direct dealing going on, which is what happens a lot here.
Yeah.
Well, I won't dispute that that occurs. It may also depend on your definition of direct dealing.
All right, well, and with regard to the severability clause, we're going to have to come back with a written response counter to that, because we're going to have to, Sherry and I are going to have to go through
research.
And do some
it's the clause that won't go away.
Give it some thought.
Mm-hmm. Well,
all right.
Yeah.
Would you like one more?
Sure.
Yeah, we've got two more to give you.
Okay. Well, we only have three copies of this one. Do you have a copy of that already?
The template page.
Yeah. Sorry.
Do you mind if I just put an 8 on that and then I'll get it back to you? Article.
Oh,
Article 30. That what? Okay.
Put this one up too. Sorry.
Number 8.
Which one is it, John? It's in your
email. Oh, yeah, it's in your email.
Article 30.
Yeah. So 30. This one,
oops,
again, is toward the back of the contract. And as we were looking at these, we noticed that there was a redundancy in article, the existing articles 30 and 31. Huh. And so what that suggested to us is a these two things belong together. And then once we started putting them together, we said, yeah, this makes sense. So what it starts off with is...
a lack of an Oxford comma is what it starts with. Moving on.
Yes, that's correct. the totality of the agreement
is first, then the effective dates, you know, and the renegotiations. And we're suggesting, or we're proposing, putting completion dates on those. So saying, okay, look, we need to, if we're just doing articles 5 and 24 is what in our proposed sequence will be the salaries article, we should be able to knock that out within 120 days.
And what's the consequence if we don't?
Well, we didn't put in a consequence. We could imagine one. We left it unstated.
Well, I mean, if you're saying that they shall be completed, then if they're not.
You say expected.
Because shall says if they're not done in 120 days, then basically one of the other parties is going to have to clear impasse. That's your choice. So we could be doing an awful lot of impasses.
Well, maybe that's what the future holds. We'll see. But I think getting negotiations completed in a timely manner is important for the university moving forward. And so that's what the intent of that is. And so then, so a lot of Article 31 either was struck out or moved up into 30.
Okay. Can we take a caucus?
Yeah, sure.
We'll be right back, John. Okay.
All right, hold on. Let me wrangle these. Oh, darn. This one is probably a complete loss.
Scott didn't leave from the good.
No, he didn't. Okay. And everybody's rolling. Don't kick the cord, John.
Okay. Can I have 1 second to just scribble a note to myself?
Yep.
Oh, of course.
Thanks. Yeah. Yep, it's not that one, right? Which article? It's this one, right?
Right.
Right.
All right, thank you for that. We'll take the combined 31 and 32 back and read through it and come back with a response. What we want, we had two other articles to give you tonight. They're both pretty involved articles that
one not so much.
One not so much, but still,
a lot of language in it.
But we want to give them to you so you have them for the benefit of review and response in the future. They would be Article 11, which is evaluation file. We've picked up a lot of language.
Most of your language in terms of cleaning things up.
There's 20 copies, so please, everyone take two.
I didn't see Scott over there.
Doggy back.
John, I think everything through 11.8 we agreed to your language, the changes you made.
Okay.
Unless that one thing that's in blue, that it's permissible for some documents, such as faculty annual, to be preserved in electronic format. I don't know if you had that or not, but if not, that's a new addition for us.
Okay, so this is the only new addition.
Yeah,
okay.
That I'm aware of. What we did on 11.8, actually under the statute, those are considered limited access records, so I think that was the more accurate. What you had done is basically just reiterated the entire statute in there, mm-hmm. and in our attempt to get away from doing that to the degree that we were trying to do it, I did agree that there are some things, there were some things in our old article that were left out, and because we always said was the academic evaluative materials, and that's not really accurate in according to the statute. So I tried to collapse the, in B, I tried to collapse the lengthy, the entire statute into like a paragraph that expresses the same ideas. So you can look at that and see if you think it captures that accurately enough.
So let me just make sure I'm about to write myself some notes. So 11.8, your intent is to summarize
the statutes. To summarize the statutory provisions, yeah. 8A is just the same thing about the Common Core, that the summary data, that type stuff. But then B is where we try to include the additional information about investigations and misconduct, disciplinary proceedings, grievances, etc. So you can, at your leisure, look at that and see if you think it does that adequately.
I'm pretty confident we can bring this one back to you next time.
Okay.
We had a little more time tonight, we probably could do that, but we need to take a look at it.
Yeah.
The other article that we have for you to consider is Article 12 on non-reappointment. Again, there's a number of changes to this article,
I think most of the changes, even though they're very different than what you put on the table, are they're relatively self-explanatory. I think the one thing that you might have a question about, why we added it, is 12.5 payout.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you may or may not be aware that there is a horrible statute that the legislature passed several years ago, which we cannot see. Well, we know why, but it was stupid. Excuse me. Even though it's on tape, I don't care. That basically says you can't, you know, we used to just, if you non-reappoint somebody and you didn't want them hanging around for 6 months, you know, just being, you could just pay them out and say go away. Well, they've now limited that to the most you can possibly pay them out is a certain amount for a number of weeks, and has to be under all these conditions. But if you have a provision in the contract that says you can pay them out up to the amount that the statute allows, then that will, you can do it. But if you don't have it in a contract, you can't pay people out, period. So that's why we put that in, so that we can kind of work around that statute.
So this is a brand new edition.
Mm-hmm. It's a brand new edition.
And its intent is to comply with state statute.
Yeah, it is. Because the statute allows you to do this, but you have to put it in the contract in order to be allowed to do it. So that's why we did it.
And in some instances where someone has not complied with the statute on a payout, the auditor has directed the university to go and recollect the money from the person, which has to happen.
So I'm sorry, could you repeat that again?
In some instances where someone has made a payout that's not in compliance with the statute, the auditor has come in and has directed the recovery of those monies. That's actually what's happened.
Hmm. think they actually passed that law because they got kicked because some junior college paid out and administered the president some exorbitant amount of money.
Mm-hmm. I can see where that would be the motivation behind that sort of legislation.
But then, you know, it's like taking a sledgehammer to when a fly swatter will do, you know. Then it applies to everybody and it limits your ability to, you know, get some secretary that you just want to give a little bit of money and say go away.
There was a chief of staff at a state university that had like a 3-year contract, and I think the university said, why don't we just part ways and we'll pay out the contract. And the auditor stopped that. And that was...
they did a great job. They probably should have put a floor on it or something so you could still handle smaller payouts.
So if an employee has a notice period that's, let's just say it's 100 units, whatever that is, but then the university wants the discretion to pay them for all or a portion of that period.
The statute only allows you, even with the contract provision, only allows you to pay up to so many weeks.
Right, so let's say it's 10 weeks, I don't know what it is. And let's say that their notice provision is 20.
They'd have to work 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was about to ask.
Yeah, no, we don't have the discretion to just pay them that short period of amount and then not give them the notice period. Yeah.
All right, that's what I was
asking. It just allows us to let them, after they work the 10 weeks, to then say, okay, let's just end this now and we'll pay you for the next
Especially if they've gotten another job, it's a great deal for them. Because you get your payout and you can go work at the other job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna have to think about this one.
Okay.
So we can't promise we'll bring this one back next time.
No, there's a lot in here you're gonna want to think about. And you may want me to talk about it in more detail, but you know, we're 10 minutes away from our...
I don't know if we discussed that one.
I think we discussed them all. Quite clearly, there was discussion questions for every single one. I made note of every single discussion. John saying whether or not he can come back qualifies as a discussion. Yeah. Okay. But are you ready to end the session then?
Wait. Okay. Let me just say one more. For clarification, I don't think we discussed... severability. Oh, yeah, we did.
Oh, yeah, that was the one where we had the big one.
We actually defined out of that.
Don't mess up my score.
Mike, you've been hanging around with professors too much. You're getting absent-minded.
Just like us.
See what happens?
We're 10 for 10. Okay, I'm stopping the recording before anyone messes it up.